So in the year AD 38, one of the consuls is called Asinus Celer. Nut in my throat. It's quite a Roman thing to do.
Just so listen, what was that, the stop bid sentence? Because he's got a nut in his throat.
It's a peanut. It's a little coated peanut. That's your fault for leaving out such delightful
offering
nibbles.
Lovely snacks.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Gaps in Knowledge podcast. I'm Reese, and I'm a geographer that knows nothing about history.
And I'm Will. I'm a historian who knows nothing about geography.
And we are on a quest to fill each other's
gaps in knowledge. So I've got a bit of a theme to my facts this week.
You have a theme? What's your theme?
For absolutely no reason, I've decided to go Roman. So all of my facts are Roman.
So we're going all Roman.
Yeah.
Okay. So mine is the furthest away it can be from thematic.
Right.
Mine has gone eclectic. It's all over the place.
Okay.
So I suppose that adds a little bit of layer and versatility to this podcast.
Yeah, a little sousson of intrigue, see if we can figure out what was going on in your brain when you picked your ideas.
Pretty much, yeah. Obviously, when I come up with these facts, I think of what could be interesting, but I don't often think of how they could all link together. But you've obviously done that with the Romans.
Well, I came across one thing. I thought, I wonder if that's true. And then that gave me three different things to look at.
Okay. Misconception corner. Here we go.
Now, the thing is, I'm kind of like, this is our third episode. I'm branching off. I'm doing freeform jazz podcasting because my misconception
confidence.
Is really a misconception. And my main story does have a massive misconception in it.
So, okay. Well, we're in the right place then.
So we'll see how this goes. It might be a massive bum note, but what do you think the word Caesar means in Latin? How would you translate it?
Now, I'm just reminding myself, when I was in, I did GCSE Latin, bizarrely. Uh-huh.
So, Salve.
I got a D. Salve, yeah. What's the other one? You're going to test me. Hortus? Is that garden or something?
Yep.
Yeah, that's my limit of my. That'll and Caldex do. Means blockhead.
I didn't know that.
They're the ones I can remember. But Caesar was always in the Latin books. He was always the main character. Mm-hmm. And he was always, basically, his days were to walk into the garden, look at the dog, walk into the hall, walk into the kitchen. A lot of walking. But I've forgotten the Latin to walk. But if I'm totally honest, I have no idea where the word seat sounds. I nearly said salad, but I'm sure that's the wrong way around.
Yeah. No, that's named after a guy called Caesar.
Okay.
In the 1920s, he invented the salad. The Waldorf salad was made in the Waldorf Hotel.
I see. Famous in Fawlty Towers, isn't it? The Waldorf salad.
Is it?
Yes. There's a whole episode around a Waldorf salad. If you haven't seen it, I recommend you watching it.
Do you know, I've only seen like two episodes of Fawlty Towers.
Well, you're about 20% of the way through them all. Yeah. There isn't many of them.
Six. Yeah. How have I missed that? Because I've seen like all the Monty Python films about a million times because I'm English. You have
to. Of course.
To. Yeah.
You've missed out there. You should go watch some.
You would think that would be right up my alley.
Absolutely right up your misconception alley. But no, so Caesar, Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar, yeah.
So I don't know what his name would translate to. I'm completely lost on this one, unfortunately.
Okay, well, I'll give you some clues in order to lure you further into misconception corner. Words that come from Caesar include Kaiser, because it would have been pronounced Kaiser.
Yes.
By the Romans. And Tsar as well.
Okay.
Which all means...
So leader, like a emperor.
Emperor, exactly. Yeah. You would think Caesar therefore means emperor.
Yeah, okay. So that if it's linked to those, that would be the assumption that Caesar means emperor.
Yeah.
Now you're about to tell me it's not.
Absolutely got him. Yeah, no, it's not at all. The weird thing about the word Caesar, which means emperor in basically every European language, and all of the emperors of Rome had Caesar in their name, they became Caesar as a title.
Right.
It's just a name. It's just a family name.
Is that really?
Thing about the word Caesar is that Julius Caesar was the first, well, he wasn't quite the first emperor of Rome. Augustus Caesar was the first emperor of Rome.
Okay.
He was adopted by Julius Caesar. So Augustus takes the name Caesar, and everybody wants to be so like Augustus that they just call themselves Caesar as well.
I see.
And so it goes from being a family name like Mortley or Flint and becomes a title.
Oh my goodness, because... So it has to be the first person who has that name. They like that person, so to want to be this person, idolize this person, that they choose that name to then become...
To then be like them.
So it was name, then title, emperor.
Yeah.
So it went that way round. So it could have been any other name.
Could have been anything.
My goodness me.
Yeah. You could have had, instead of Tsar Nicholas II, you could have had Smith Nicholas II.
Oh, that's boring.
Also, which is boring. Yeah.
But wow. So Caesar literally Caesar
doesn't
just a name.
Mean anything. Yeah, it's just a name. And what it actually means, we don't really know. There's three different etymologies. Mm-hmm. One is it means hairy. Because one of them was apparently born quite hairy.
Very hirsute.
Very hirsute, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it could be pale blue eyes.
Okay.
Like the Velvet Underground song. Or it could mean to do with a caesarean section. And it's not sure which one comes first.
Yeah, two out of three of those meet my meet that criteria you just put. Uh-huh. Hirsute, blue-eyed.
Uh-huh. But not born of caesarean.
No.
No?
No.
Well, you're no Caesar then.
I'm 66% Caesar.
You are. You're C's?
C's.
Or yeah. Easy?
Yeah, I think I prefer the first part of that one.
But they had caesarean sections in ancient Rome, which strikes us as odd because they had no anaesthetic.
That must have been a lot of pain then.
Well, the woman wouldn't have felt it because they only performed it on mothers who had already died. Ah, which kind of makes sense.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So obviously these days it's not the case.
No, not at all. No. It's not exactly routine, but it's a fairly common procedure.
Yes.
Yeah, but no, only on mothers who had died. So it could be that one of the early Caesars was born by caesarean, or it could be that they were just particularly hairy. We don't really know. But either way, Caesar is just a name.
Ah.
So Julius Caesar's full name... Well, actually, let's get you for another misconception. What was Julius Caesar's first name?
I feel like you just told me. I'm just going to say it's obviously not Julius.
It's obviously not Julius. No, it's Gaius.
Gaius?
Yeah. So Julius was his family name.
Oh, is it like career where they do the first last name first and then...
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
The Roman names are very strange. So you have three different names if you're rich and two different names if you're not.
Right.
So you have your birth name, which would be Gaius,
mm-hmm.
or for me would be Will or William. And then you have your family name. Mm-hmm. Which would be Julius.
Yep.
And then you'd have your sub-family name, which would be Caesar.
I see.
So there were thousands of Julii, lots of Juliuses.
Oh.
And within that, there was a sub-family called the Caesar family. So it would be like, we spoke about Louis XVI.
Yes.
His main dynasty was the Capet dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
He was part of the Bourbon branch, which is where bourbon whiskey or bourbon biscuits came
okay.
from. So he would be Louis Capet Bourbon.
That's quite... So you can tell a lot from someone's name, exactly where they're from, how important they are.
Yeah.
And well,
the only thing you can't tell is actually who they are, because by the first century, there's only 12 names in Rome. Only 12 male
12?
Names.
12?
Yeah. They just
it's been a nightmare in a post office.
Yeah, absolutely. Marcus? Yes. So instead, they start giving people nicknames afterwards. So that's why... Augustus takes the name Augustus because it's kind of a nickname. It means august. It means venerable. It means fancy. So Gaius Julius Caesar didn't take a nickname, but lots of people had nicknames like Germanicus, which means killer of the Germans.
Oh, right.
Or Africanus, which means killer of the Africans. Or Britannicus, which means...
Yes, yeah, killer of the British, by any chance.
Yeah. So Roman naming convention is very weird. And the guy we know is Gaius Julius Caesar.
Hmm.
Would have been probably called Gaius or Caesar. And the idea of Hail Caesar is like Hail Flint or Hail Mortley.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a lot. It's just running one extra thing in terms of types of names. It's the Icelandic name system. Are you aware of that one? Where it's absolutely it seems very archaic in the way that it's set up. So you take your father's first name as a part of your last name or something like that.
Yeah.
So my Icelandic name would be Rhys Michelson,
for
example, the son of Michael.
Edwardson.
And you'll be Edwardson, which is a name actually, probably somewhere.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So names are cool. They can learn a lot from them.
Similar in Russian, I think, and in a lot of Slavic languages. So, certainly tried to read War and Peace. I gave up
with War and Peace. I was about 500 pages.
Yeah, exactly. It does drag.
A little bit draggy, yeah.
But then you've got kind of Nikolai Dmitrievich, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And he might be called Nikolai, he might be called Nikushka or Kola or Dmitrievich or whatever, depending on who's talking to him.
just never want to get my hands on a Russian or Icelandic phone book.
I'll be there
for hours.
But which Ivanisevich am I looking for? Like millions.
So would you like to hear my misconception corner?
Draw me into misconception corner.
The geography misconception corner. Yeah. So I have a question as well. And my question is, what is the shape of the Earth's orbit?
Ooh. Ooh.
Around the sun, of course.
Yeah. Now, I've played some Kerbal Space Program.
Okay.
So I'm going to say elliptical.
Elliptical.
Purely circular.
Okay.
I think the moon kind of wobbles.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no basis for that. I'm trying to sound smart.
So the thing is, the Earth's orbit is sometimes circular and it's sometimes ovoidal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And by the way, I just want to say I had to learn the word ovoidal.
Ovoidal.
Overly was the word I was trying to type into Google to make sure I got it right. And I come with ovoidal. I was like, oh, there it is. So, but there is this idea that the Earth on its orbit goes through different cycles of shapes.
Uh-huh.
And they're called Milankovitch cycles.
Milankovitch cycles.
Yeah. Serbian scientist called Milutin Milankovitch, he hypothesized this idea that the Earth goes through different types of cycles within its orbit.
Okay.
And the one that we're describing at the moment has a cycle of 200,000 years where it goes into a circular orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And then goes into an ovoidal orbit over 200,000 years.
Right.
So the Earth itself, when it goes around the sun, changes its shape. And this, you may think, oh, this is very physics style.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, we can link it back to geography because it is actually the main reason why we have physical causes of climate change.
Aha,
and that
right.
we go through inter and periglacial periods based solely on these cycles.
On the, what were they called again?
He was called Milankovitch.
Milankovitch. So based on the Milankovitch.
Milankovitch cycles.
Wobbles.
Yes. Yeah. Well, interesting to say wobbles because he came up with two other ones as well.
Okay.
So I'm going to break these down. So the first one we just described where we have the shape of the orbit of Earth is called the eccentricity, where it goes from circular to ovoidal every 200,000 years. Then there's something called obliquity.
Okay.
And what obliquity is the Earth, or can you maybe guess what that might be?
So instead of being on a flat 2D orbit, it also wobbles up and down a wee bit.
You're almost there. So what this does, the Earth tilts on its axes 3 or 4 degrees every 41,000 years.
3 or 4 degrees?
Yeah, 3 or 4 degrees.
Wow, that's
so
a lot.
From 22 to 24 and a half degrees, it tilts on its axes every 41,000 years. Uh-huh. And that's called obliquity. And the last one is called precession.
Right.
And precession, do you know when you spin a top on a table? And then as it starts to slow down, it wobbles.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Earth does every 21,000 years.
Uh-huh.
So the Earth, it is never in a singular one state as it orbits around the sun.
Right.
We're talking like every maximum 200,000 years.
Yeah.
But it's not just one going around a circle constantly. It changes its shape, its tilt, and the shape of orbit as well around the sun. Mm-hmm. And it is responsible for physical causes of climate change, which is a really good thing for climate science denied people to cling on to. Because they say, well, it happens in Earth's history anyway. Because, you know, in Earth's been two big ice balls in its history.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was maybe 2 billion years ago, and then maybe 200 million years ago, it had been a big ice ball at some point. But what's really interesting about these Milankovitch cycles is that people kind of played it down and said, well, does the Earth read it? Where's the proof of this? And he was like, well, they link up with the ice age beginnings and ends every 200,000 years.
Right.
And that's what we're linking this to, is that so every 200,000 years, the amount of solar radiation, insolation, they call that, on the Earth's mid-latitude ranges varies based on these cycles.
Right.
And they trigger glacial retreat or glacial advancement.
Mm-hmm.
And so technically speaking, and this might be an extra misconception, is that we are technically still within an ice age currently now.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because there is still ice on our poles and our planets.
Right. So an ice age only ends when the ice caps are clear of ice.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So we're coming out of it with a lot of the ice retreat, both in the Arctic and Antarctic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it, I mean, obviously we have human-induced or anthropogenic climate change, as they call it, which, you know, is you know, it's fact. Yeah. And science, you know, even actually there's arguments within climate scientists about what has been the most important within human climate. Is it transport or is it our food diets and so on? And, you know, but ultimately it's pretty much fact that we have contributed to increase of greenhouse gas in our atmosphere that have caused the climate to change in a short space of time. However, it does happen physically over millennia and millions of years. Our climate does naturally change.
Because the Earth wobbles a little bit.
Because it's a little bit wobbly. Yeah. So that's Milankovitch. And it's a cool name to say, isn't it?
It is Milankovitch cycles.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
It's got some punch.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Sounds like a drink at a bar, I think.
I'll have a Milankovitch cycle, please.
Yeah. That's just, that's a wobbly pub crawl, isn't
that
it?
That is, exactly. Yeah, just a Milankovitch cycle. Exactly. So, I have called my main event for this week, The Tale of Bootykins and Swifthoof.
I just can't wait for that already. That's going to be exciting. I mean, obviously, Roman-themed.
Yep, Roman-themed, yes. And who we're talking about is Gaius Julius Caesar.
Okay.
Not that one.
See, again, the names, they're running out of names already, doubling up and everything here.
About the millionth Gaius Julius Caesar that we have in Rome. But this one was the son of a guy called Germanicus.
Okay.
Which, do you remember what that meant?
Germanicus kills the Germans.
Kills the Germans, exactly, yes. So this Gaius, who I'll call Gaius for a bit until he gets his name that you may well have heard of.
Okay.
He was born in 12 AD, and he spent a lot of the time following his father around in the army, because his father got the name from killing Germans. And he was definitely based at Xanten for quite a while.
Ah, Xanten, that's not a million miles away from where we live, Xanten.
No, it's not. Have you been?
No, but it's a place that starts with X, isn't it?
It does.
Yeah. No, we were planning to go when my family were here, but we didn't actually go in the end. But apparently there's an archaeological site there.
Yeah, there's a massive kind of Roman dig there, and there's a big fake Colosseum and fake circus and things like that there, and fake villa that you can go and kind of wander around. Open-air museum type thing at Xanten. Bootykins, little Gaius Julius Caesar, is based in Xanten for a bit. And whilst he's there, his parents dress him up like a little baby Roman soldier, which is cute.
That is quite cute. Are they expecting him then to go to battle?
Not... They're not that strong. No.
Fair enough, not that strict.
And because he looks absolutely adorable, the soldiers give him a name, which is Bootykins.
Bootykins.
Yeah. And the Latin for the kind of boots that the Roman soldiers wear is caligae.
Right.
And so the Latin for Bootykins is Caligula. Have you heard of the Emperor Caligula?
Yeah, I've heard of Caligula before.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, this is the Emperor Caligula.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, so he's, Caligula means little booties.
Little booties?
Yeah, and he hated the name. He really hated it. Because it's like being called, little wiggums, little Emperor Duvaloises.
That guy must be, to have, because he's quite, must be quite a strong person, a strong personality, I assume.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Sure I will.
Strong is a very pleasant way of putting it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Bootykins, his father, Germanicus, massively powerful Roman general, too powerful for the emperor. We're only in 12 AD, so we're on to the second Roman emperor.
Okay.
We've had Caesar Augustus, who dies of old age, and he's replaced by his adopted son called Tiberius. Augustus never has any legitimate sons with his wife, called Livia. So the... come on, brain.
It's one of those things, isn't it? You're in your holiday moment and suddenly your brain just slows down.
Yeah, and it's not going to tell me what the word is. No legitimate heirs.
Okay.
Yep. So Caesar Augustus doesn't have any legitimate heirs with his wife, Livia. And so he has to pick an adopted son instead. So he picks a guy called Tiberius. Tiberius does have legitimate heirs, but by this point in time, you can't do something that Augustus didn't. Because there's only been one emperor so far.
Okay, oh, I see.
Well, who are you? Better than Augustus. Augustus was worshipped as a god. He had the temples put up all over the Roman Empire.
He's the main man.
He is the main man. So you just can't go against him. So that means the succession to Tiberius is a bit up in the air.
Okay.
So he's got to kill his main rivals, otherwise they'll just take over, of whom Germanicus is one. So he kills Germanicus, and he imprisons Bootykins, Caligula, and he imprisons Bootykins' mother, and imprisons all of his brothers.
Wow, okay.
And he has all of them murdered, except for Caligula.
Okay.
And we're not entirely sure why.
So he just, maybe because of the name.
He just likes the name Boot. Who can possibly be a threat?
Yeah.
Yeah. All of the information that we get comes from a biographer about 100 years afterwards. So it's not brilliant information, a guy called Suetonius. But he writes that Tiberius said about Caligula that to allow him to live would prove to be the ruin of himself and of all men.
Oh.
He's a nasty piece of work, this Boutique.
Okay, so he's...
And he sees that from a very early age. So he keeps him locked away on an island called Capri, which is just around the Bay of Naples.
Okay.
And Tiberius has a massive palace there. And the kind of decadence that these Roman emperors are living in is that he doesn't just have courtesans, like a harem that he can go and sleep with. He also has like boys that he can go and sleep with. But he doesn't just have boys that he can go and sleep with.
Oh, what?
He's trained them so that when he's swimming, they would swim in between his legs and, as Mary Beard, the professor, puts it, nibble his genitals. Oh.
Wow.
That's the kind of decadence we're talking about here.
So this guy's mentally insane.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So that was just to digress slightly here. Mm. So, but that was quite a common thing with Romans, was to have relationships or to have just sexual partners with anyone they wanted.
They were, yeah. I mean, in some periods of Roman history, yes. In some, not. So, for example, Emperor Augustus imprisoned his eldest daughter, called Julia, on an island, another different island off the Bay of Naples, for the rest of her life, when she was about 25, 30,
right,
because she was having a single extramarital affair.
Ah, so, okay.
Under Augustus, absolutely not.
Not doing that at all.
But under Tiberius or Caligula, nibble away.
Nibble away, do what you want, and... Oh, yeah. Wow. And that sexuality in Roman times was, anyone could do anything they wanted.
Pretty much.
It was, doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I mean, we're not quite talking ancient Greek levels of pederasty where men would be expected to have boys to look after them. Like ancient Greek / 1920s boarding schools. It's not quite like that.
But it's not far off.
No.
Okay.
It's not.
Okay. I was linking more to the Greeks and the ancient Greeks.
Yeah. The Greeks had different ideas behind that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But the Romans, to an extent, and we'll come back to that idea in a bit, because boy does Caligula live by the sword, die by the sword, so to speak.
Fair enough.
So Tiberius is worried about this guy Caligula. He has him imprisoned, and Tiberius is completely right to be worried about this guy Caligula, because Caligula ends up getting Tiberius murdered.
Okay.
Probably. Could be that Tiberius died of natural causes. Probably Caligula murders him. And so at the age of 24, Caligula becomes emperor in 37 AD. And you would expect him to be, because he's kind of this nasty piece of work, essentially, you would expect him to be not particularly loved. But he wasn't. He was really loved by the people of Rome. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things he would do would be stand in the middle of Rome and just chuck coins out of windows.
Oh.
And not in a kind of aggressive yob kind of way.
Was it in a way which is like pleasant for people to go,
take some coins.
Have some money that I have here.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, that's very kind of him to do so.
And he published all the government accounts, which is something that was very rare at the time, so that people could look at them and say, yeah, the Roman Empire's doing all right.
Okay.
And he built massive aqueducts and he held enormous public games. So to the people, he was excellent.
So was there an ulterior motive here?
Yeah, power.
Okay.
Purely power. Because to be the emperor in Rome, you need three sources of power. You need the people, who really aren't particularly important because they just smell, whatever.
Yeah, who whatever.
You need the family of the Caesars, the Julii Caesars. Well, how does he gain the power there? Basically by murdering anybody who stands against him. He murders his cousin, who was also his adopted son.
Oh, okay.
Yep. He murders his grandmother. He murders his brother-in-law. And he murders his father-in-law as well.
So it's just him left on his own?
Pretty much. Just him and his three sisters, who, again, we'll come back to in a minute.
Okay.
So he's got the public on his side. He's got the people on his side. He also needs the aristocracy on his side.
Right.
Now, getting the aristocracy on your side is very, very difficult. And there's two ways of going about it. You can either appease them or you can ignore them.
Okay.
appeasing them would take a lot of effort, a lot of diplomacy, a lot of intermarriages, a lot of skill. Ignoring them would take absolutely nothing at all.
You can just ignore them. That's quite easy to do.
That's exactly what he ends up doing.
Fair enough.
Yeah. He just
the line of least resistance.
Yeah. He just simply ignores them and simply overwhelms them with majesty. And his majesty is absurd. As a kind of... So he kept his sisters in the palace that he built on the Palatine Hill. The Palatine Hill is a hill in Rome where the emperors lived. And that's where we get the word palace from. This is how grand it was.
Okay.
Palatine becomes palace. And he sleeps with them constantly, by all accounts.
Quite promiscuous character.
Yeah. And he hosts enormous orgies, sleeping with people left, right, and center.
That sounds good fun if you're that person.
It does sound good fun if you're that person.
Yeah.
But the idea behind it was power, because the way that it would work is he would invite people into the dinner parties and he would basically sit in front of the front door. And when people came in, he would get somebody to note down who he wants to sleep with during the dinner party.
Right.
And so, like, in between courses, he would point at a woman, they'd walk off, come back 10 minutes later, all flustered and red-faced, and whilst her wife was right there.
Oh, right.
Her husband was right there. And you would think that would be enough, but then he would just blatantly go, she's not very good in bed, is she?
That's a bold character.
No, Imperator, she's not. Is all you can say, because otherwise it's just going to kill you.
Yeah.
So could get away with this kind of thing.
Jesus.
But at some point, it kind of, well, if it wasn't mad enough already, it kind of verges into madness, because he's so terrified by the power that everyone has around him and by the fact that he might be murdered like Tiberius was, that he just goes insane. And some of the stories you might have heard of, one of them you probably won't have done, which is that one time he's at the Roman Games, in the not in the Colosseum because it hasn't been built yet, but just watching the gladiators fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of half time. And so snacks are coming around and people are having a chat. And he says,
okay,
I'm bored. Guards, that part of the audience, feed them to the lions for me.
What the hell?
And they do.
And they just do it.
And that's the entertainment.
And, and these guys who just got in the wrong seat in the wrong... Imagine if you bought your season ticket in that section.
Tough luck.
Tough luck for you.
You're in the splash zone. Yeah, what do you get? And his madness starts to deteriorate his relationship with the Senate, which is still around, but not very important. So in the year AD 38, one of the consuls is called Asinus Celer. Nut in my throat. It's quite a Roman thing to do.
Just so, listen, what was that, the stop mid-sentence? Because he's got a nut in his throat.
It's a peanut. It's a little coated peanut. That's your fault for leaving out such delightful
offering
nibbles.
Lovely snacks.
Yeah. Different kind of nibble.
So it's served up by little boys. That's
just for safeguarding purposes?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
No.
Okay, yeah, so he's called Asinus Celer, which means fast donkey. Which is a great name.
That's a brilliant name.
Yeah. And
can you say that again for me? Just say it one more time.
Fast donkey.
No, I know.
Fast.
Fast donkey.
Yeah. Asinus Celer. Or
Asinus Celer.
Yeah. So Asinus as in ass.
Yeah.
And Celer as in accelerate.
Okay. So Asinus Celer. I want my next pet to be named that.
So he's one of the two consuls. Caligula's horse is called Swifthoof or Incitatus. And there's quite a nice story about Swifthoof, which is that, I'm going to call him Swifthoof because it's so much
that's
better
a cooler
Incitatus,
name. Yeah.
Which is that the soothsayer, the kind of spirit medium of the previous emperor, Tiberius, said that Caligula had less chance of being emperor than he had of riding his horse across the Bay of Naples.
Right.
And so what does he do when he becomes emperor? He builds a bridge
across
the bay and just rides Swifthoof up and down over it, going,
look at me.
Yeah.
Gotta say, it's a very expensive way to put your two middle fingers up at someone, isn't it?
What does he care? He's literally Emperor of Rome.
Fair enough.
And I mean, this horse is spoilt to within an inch of his life. I mean, he's given a marble stable.
That's
for
wow.
One. His manger is made out of ivory. So he's just eating out of ivory.
Oh, wow.
He's given blankets which are pure purple. And do you know about the Romans and purple?
I just know there's some significance there, but I don't know what it is.
So it was reserved exclusively for the very highest classes.
Right.
The senators and then for the emperor.
So it's quite a rich colour then.
It is. The reason why is because you can only get it from squeezing a very specific clam.
Okay.
And the clam will emit a tiny, tiny amount of dye. And so in order to get enough dye to dye an entire robe, you have to squeeze thousands of these clams. So in order to get enough dye to upholster an entire stable and give blankets to a horse, you need tens of thousands of these clams, which then can't be eaten. So it's a disgusting show of wealth, essentially.
That's obscene.
Yeah.
It's ostentatious, Max.
It is absolutely ostentatious, yes. He had a collar that was covered in jewels, because why not? They did some excavations on the palace on the Palatine Hill, and it seems as though in every room there were jewels, but every wall in the palace was covered in gold and had jewels just pressed into the wall.
Like, my God.
That's how disgustingly, absurdly rich this guy
is. What would the people think of that? Do they like that?
Well, this is the thinking. The everyday people would have no idea. They would never see the palace on the Palatine Hill. But the people who he brought to the palace, they would, the message that would go through their head would be, this guy's so ridiculously wealthy that I don't stand a chance.
Right.
There is simply no way that I can overpower this guy. So there's no point trying.
Okay, so actually this ostentatious behavior is a way of showing power, pure saying power. You don't mess with me.
Yeah, because it's just not going to end well. Yeah, no, pure power. And so the thinking is behind the story of making his horse a consul is that he says, this fast donkey, we should replace him with Swift Hoof.
Yeah.
Like, he's so useless, we may as well put Swift Hoof in there. It's a pun, essentially. So he doesn't actually make his horse consul, unfortunately.
I'd like the idea of it, though.
But it is nice.
Yeah.
And if it makes you feel any better, he does make his horse a priest.
Okay, well, you know, there's some title.
So Caligula's mad, and he comes to power in 37 AD. How many years do you think he lasts? Bear in mind, he's only the third emperor of Rome.
So it's either really short or really long. Mm-hmm. It's one of those two.
It is indeed.
I'm going to go with really long.
Okay.
Just because I like the idea of someone of that power absolutely dominating for that long, but there must be something here which he drastically falls down suddenly.
Yeah, he's murdered by his guards within 4 years of taking control.
Right, there you go.
Yeah, so no. And so first emperor Augustus died of natural causes. Second emperor Tiberius murdered. Third emperor Caligula murdered. Fourth emperor Claudius murdered.
Murdered.
By his wife. In order that her son, who wasn't his son, Rome's weird.
Okay, that is a strange one.
Would get into power, who was called Nero.
Just one of these guards that killed this guy.
Hmm.
What? Did they come together and go, right, we need to sort this out? Like,
Yeah, pretty much. He had two sets of guards, some of them from Germany, from when he was working in, well, when he was growing up in the army, and some of them from Rome, and the Roman ones hated him.
Right.
Because, I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, you would do, wouldn't you?
Yeah. But then the German ones loved him so much that when he was murdered by the Roman ones, they went on a massive killing spree and just killed everyone in the building.
Wow. Well, these guards, they must have built up the courage and then to go, right, it's all or nothing here. Because if this fails, we're screwed.
We're screwed. Yeah, but I mean, what's the other option?
Yeah, there is no other option.
The horse is a priest. I'm not a sane man. So that's the end of Caligula. So it is kind of a misconception corner as well. He doesn't make his horse consul. His horse isn't made a senator, but...
Horse is a priest.
His horse is a priest. And it's not a terrible pun.
No.
No. But I mean, that's how much power that he had and how kind of ridiculous he was with his power that he could get away with making
just
a
horse got it all in his head. And yeah. I'm the most powerful person there can be.
Exactly.
So much so that my guards can kill me.
Yes.
Whoops.
Which happens again and again and again and again and again. Yes.
Is there any time to relax in Roman times?
No, absolutely not. But the thing is, if you remember, Augustus doesn't have any male children who can take over the throne.
Okay.
And so from the very first emperor, you remember from our first episode, what's the most important thing a king can do?
Yes, you need to have a baby.
And if the succession isn't clearly laid out, which it isn't, then you need to impress upon people your power in some other way. And for some emperors, like Marcus Aurelius, that meant through your philosophy, through your wisdom, through your benevolence, and through your good leadership. And for others, it meant orgies that may or may not have involved horses, like Caligula.
Like Caligula.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Horses and priests and Caligula's power.
And there's the Ballad of Bootykins and Swifthoof.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Bootykins.
Yeah.
The Cupid of Bootykins.
All throughout his life, he's still Bootykins. Yeah.
Right. Shall I go with mine?
Yes.
Let's try it.
Let's go.
So I've got my fact for this week, Will, and I've called it Kolkata.
Okay.
Kolkata, but it's not as drastic as it sounds. It's not as gruesome as it sounds. Actually, we're going to be discussing the end of the rickshaw.
The end of the rickshaw.
The end of the rickshaw.
The front or the back?
All of it. Okay. The whole right. end of it. So, what do you know about a rickshaw?
So I remember seeing them when we went to India, but they were called tuk-tuks, I think.
Okay.
Or is that a tuk-tuk, a motorized rickshaw?
Tuk-tuk, I think, is a motorized one.
Right.
Whereas okay. a rickshaw is a human-powered.
So like a bike with a big bit on the back for people to sit in.
Pretty much, but not necessarily people, also producing goods as well.
Okay.
It could also be on it. But so do you know, where were you in India out of interest?
In Goa.
In Goa. Okay, so yeah. we're specifically looking at Kolkata.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've called it Kolkata.
Clever.
That's the nearest I could get.
Give
them
a round
sort
of applause, listeners.
I think so. Kolkata is one of the last remaining cities in the world that still use rickshaws as a mean of urban transport.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a big thing in India at the moment, particularly in Kolkata. They are starting to not like these rickshaws.
Yeah.
They think it's very archaic and they think it's not the future of urban metropolis transport.
Okay. But are you going to tell us what the future is?
I will hope, yes, it does come on to what the future might be, particularly in Kolkata.
Okay, because I have a feeling it's going to destroy the earth.
Well, it might well do. I don't know, actually. It okay. will destroy some people, their livelihoods to a certain extent.
What is it, tigers?
But yeah, you'll see where this one goes. But I just want to set this up a little bit. So the rickshaws, these ones that we're thinking of now. Now, when you picture a rickshaw, what does it look like to you?
I don't know why, but it's blue.
But it's a blue rickshaw. Blue. It could well be blue.
Yeah. No, but I'm thinking of tuk-tuks again, which for some reason were all blue as I remember them. It's a bike with, it's like a chariot, but instead of a horse, it's a bike.
Pretty much. Got that's two wooden wheels at the back.
Yeah, that's the one.
And you've got the big handles that go either side of the driver at the front.
Yeah.
And then they just literally run along the traffic.
Ah, so I was thinking of bike rickshaws. I wasn't thinking of human rickshaws.
So there you go. These are human rickshaws. No pedals on these ones.
So we are going...
This is Fred Flintstone style.
Blimey.
Yeah. So, but they still operate in Kolkata.
Uh-huh.
And there's a huge economy with them.
Sorry, but that is insane. I was thinking the bike ones is fine.
No, this is insane. These are people running with these carts, essentially.
That's like feudalism levels of
it
insanity.
Really is.
Wow.
But you need to remember that people rely on these significantly in Kolkata. Yeah. One of the big things is in the morning when it's quiet, they get a lot of the rickshaw drivers, they're called, is it rickshaw, not waddies, that was last week, the wallers.
Wallers, like a chai waller.
Yes.
So somebody brings you tea.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're rickshaw wallers.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it because, if you know this, there's someone called Rick Waller.
I do remember Rick Waller because my brain was poisoned at the same time as yours.
Rick Waller was from Medway Towns.
Was he?
He was a singer on the like stars, was it like a pop
was
idol?
It Pop Idol, yeah.
Something like that. Really, really corpulent. Use the proper word there.
He was a massive man.
Portly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to derail us for a sec then because you've got Rick Waller, you've got you.
Yeah.
Who else comes from Medway?
There's pretty much, you have to, I don't know anyone else really notable that comes
Charles
from.
Dickens lives
Charles
in
Dickens does.
He was born
Harry
in
Hill.
Portsmouth. Harry Hill.
Okay. Harry Hill, yeah.
Fine.
That's the Medway posse right there.
Wow.
Yeah, not many of us.
Pulling your weight culturally there, aren't you?
But so these rickshaws, they, in the morning, they often have lots of produce and they deliver lots of the produce for bars and restaurants all around Kolkata early in the morning. And for each journey, they get about 60 or 70 rupees for each journey.
Okay.
And they do a couple of them in the morning and then they do a couple of them during the day. It might be tourists, it might be people, even animals sometimes. But one of the benefits of these rickshaws is that they go through tiny alleyways that cars can't go through. So they can cut journey time significantly. So you can actually rely on these to get your produce on time and to do many journeys in a day. So to actually run sort of this sort of low level economy of transport of goods and people is actually quite important for Kolkata to keep that sort of foundation going.
So it's like a bike courier.
Pretty much, yeah.
Except running.
Yeah, except running. Yeah. So these guys are incredibly fit and it's not bound by age either. I mean, you've got a whole range of ages and it's usually family run as well. So if your father is a rickshaw waller, then you're likely to be a rickshaw waller as well. Well, actually, maybe not in the future. So there's in 2005, Kolkata decided that they didn't want any rickshaws whatsoever in their city. So they put a ban on them.
Okay.
In 2005.
Why would they do that?
So they were saying that the problem is the rickshaw wallers are seen as kind of sort of like inhumane species of that run around our streets.
Right, they're like untouchables.
Yeah, untouchables, and they don't like the look of them. We are now developing a modern metropolis here We have urban transport. We have cars. We do not need people running around with these carts delivering stuff.
They've managed to take an utterly inhumane system and abolish it in the most utterly inhumane
Correct.
Way.
That's what they're trying to do here. However, it doesn't stop them.
Okay.
It doesn't stop them.
Would it?
They're continuing to do this this regardless of the fact that it's been banned. However, actually, it does go on to say, we do learn actually in 2011, the new government in India has decided that actually we are still going to maintain the ban by not giving out licenses, but we're not going to do anything with trying to remove them off the streets.
Right.
So that's okay, kind of so their
it's
approach
banned,
at the
but
moment.
It's not.
It's a ban, but it's not. Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of the approach at the moment. However, one of the big things that they're talking about at the moment is, well, first, let me, what do you think the living conditions are like for people who operate these rituals?
So we're talking 70 rupees a trip.
Yep.
We're talking on their feet literally the entire day.
Entire day, working 7 days a week.
The government wants to get rid of them because they are disgusting urchins.
Yes, and they have, just to add an extra few facts in here as well, to be able to rent the rickshaw, it's 900 rupees per month.
Okay, well, I'm in a word, I would say their living conditions would be extravagant.
Well, it's not the best.
No.
No, unfortunately not.
What a surprise.
What a surprise, yeah. There's no misconception corner in this bit.
What a surprise.
No, so just so the listener knows, this is an article from the Geographical magazine. And
oh, classic.
Of course, you know.
Are you allowed in the Royal Geographical Society until you've got a membership to the Geographic magazine?
If you keep going, eventually they might just give you a magazine.
Right.
But I am a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society. So I can put it on my little title if I really want to, which I did at school. I did at school for a while.
I don't know why you wouldn't. I genuinely don't know why you wouldn't.
I think I stopped it recently. I'm going to start it again now you've brought it
Go
up.
For it.
I'm going to put it at the end of my email title at the bottom.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm a fellow of the society, and they produce a magazine each month, and this is one of the articles. Yeah. However, the live in a place called a Dera. Have you heard of a Dera before?
I've not heard of a Dera.
So Dera is a type of socio-religious organization in northern India, and they are described as monasteries or the extended residential sites of religious leaders. So these are kind of like buildings or areas for.
So kind of like an orphanage, but for adults.
Yes, to a certain extent, that's
like
what they are.
Like a boarding house.
Pretty much. That's what these deras are. And a lot of these rickshaw runners live in these deras.
Yeah.
Is what this is about.
So we're talking one level above a slum.
Pretty much, yeah. So you've got Dharavi in Mumbai, which is slum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got these.
Right.
Yeah, so the living conditions are terrible. You've got maybe in a space of like 4 square meters, maybe 5 square meters, you can get like 8 people living in there.
Jeez.
Which is why most people just sleep there only.
Yeah.
It's why you have a lot of street food vendors in these places, because there's no room for a kitchen
right.
or anything. So it's easier and cheaper to go outside and just eat food on the street.
Mm.
And having been to India, it's a delightful experience.
Mm-hmm.
But actually is also really important. It happens in Thailand as well and Southeast Asia. A lot of street food vendors are the pinnacle part of people's culinary experience. They need to eat in these restaurants or in these street food places. Otherwise, they will not eat at all because there's no place for a kitchen.
No,
it's cheaper to not have a kitchen.
Yeah.
So one of the things as well that, so not only are they having this ban, they've also been heavily impacted by COVID-19 recently. There's been hardly any business in Calcutta and there's been hardly any tourists. So as a result, the work has declined significantly. So what this means is they can't also start sending money home. They call that remittance. I suppose it's domestic remittance when you send money back home to your family in rural areas. So these people obviously have come to Calcutta to get a job to send money back home to improve their family's lives.
This is like Victorian England or
exactly.
in Russia under the Tsars.
Pretty much the same thing in that sense. Yeah. However, so COVID-19 has really ruined them to a certain extent where they've gone back home. They haven't got to pay rent, obviously, where they're living in the deras, and they haven't got to pay for the rent for the rickshaw. So they've just about managed to scrape through. These are someone's been interviewing the rickshaw runners about this. And they would send home, for example, 5,000 rupees each month, which is, you know, lucrative enough, I suppose, for 7 days of work in a week. It's pretty hard work. But they haven't done that for about 6 months. However, with a combination of the ban, a combination of COVID-19, this particular Dera, they had about maybe, I think, 50 rickshaw workers, and only 6 have come back to operate again. So there's been a significant decline.
So almost 90% attrition rate.
Pretty much, yeah. And it runs true of a lot of the statistics as well. So before the ban, there were 18,000 rickshaw operators in Calcutta. Mm-hmm. And then now there's about 5,500.
Oh, wow.
So there's a significant decline. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, though, these people, that's their livelihoods. That's their job.
Yeah.
And, they're actually going to lose a lot of their income. They don't know what to, they are only skilled in this particular, they're very fit, obviously. Mm-hmm. They're only skilled in this area. So as a result, they don't know what to do whilst the government is going to start moving a lot of these rickshaws away from them.
Okay.
However, there is a potential future thing here, and about the transition of the rickshaw. And what they're thinking of doing...
I'm very nervous about where this is going.
Yeah, right. So what they're thinking of doing, you'll like this, there is one union of rickshaw runners in India.
Nice.
And it's called the All Bengal Rickshaw Union. Mm-hmm. And it was set up in 1934. And the idea is what they're trying to do is they're trying to keep, obviously, the rickshaw operators running within Kolkata because it is a business for them. It is a livelihood. Yeah. It is a way of making money. However, what the government don't like is this, as you described, the medieval aspect of these rickshaws.
It's inhumane.
Yeah, it is totally inhumane. So what they're thinking of doing is they are developing a electric version, very much similar to an e-bike as we see cycling around all of Europe at the moment. Mm-hmm. So they're thinking of doing that instead. However, there's a couple of caveats here and a couple of discussion negotiations between the union and the government about how to make this work. So what they're trying to do is the union are trying to convince the government to pay 95% of the price of an electric rickshaw, which costs 90,000 rupees, mm-hmm. so that business owners can buy a collection of them, who can then rent them out.
Right.
And the idea is that if the government pays for this, it means that the people who run the rickshaws can still afford to have these rickshaws rented and still operate.
Okay.
That sounds great. Sounds like it could work. However, there's been some sticking points, as they say, with this negotiation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, on top of the fact they're trying to ban them entirely anyway. But the other problem is the government have only said we are only going to train the youth in using these electric rickshaws.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So God.
Which is terrible. It means that the elderly ones that are using the rickshaws to support their families are not going to be
what
able
they're supposed to do.
Yeah, what they're going to do. There is one thing where they're going to try to put a pension plan in place for them, but it doesn't seem a very lucrative
package.
They're
going
to
try.
Yeah, well, exactly. So they're going to try and support them with a pension package.
Oh, I tried and I failed. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Good luck. Good luck with the rest of your... Yeah, doesn't really work, does it?
No.
No, but this is what the union and the government are in constant conversation at the moment as a way to try and keep at least these rickshaws on the streets because there are people's livelihoods.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's a rickshaw, I can read this out to you, there's a rickshaw business owner who's been a rickshaw business owner for 40 years called Randeni Sharma, and he is not optimistic with the future of rickshaws and says, I know sooner or later they will disappear, but 20 years ago, my father told me that in 20 years, rickshaws would no longer exist. And they still circulate around the city today. Mm. I don't know when the time will come, but I think we are looking at the last generation of rickshaw pullers in Kolkata. Mm-hmm. So that is your kind of rickshaw mm-hmm. knowledge today. Uh-huh. But yeah, it's not looking... But imagine it though. Imagine you've built your whole career or your whole life or your whole skill.
And now you're defunct.
And now you're absolutely defunct.
Yeah.
I always think though, what's the problem here though? One interesting thing about these rickshaws is that they're actually quite vital during the monsoon season. Uh-huh. What can't go through flooded waters? Uh-huh. Motorized vehicles.
Yeah.
So during those times, what do you need to rely on to get your produce moving around? You need a rickshaw puller.
Yeah.
Because they can go through the water.
You definitely don't want an electric rickshaw in water.
Exactly.
That's going to fry.
Exactly. So for me, at the moment, just kind of hypothesizing this, even though they kind of want to go to a modern city, trying to completely sort of like cut off all of your cultural roots with the rickshaw, for me, it still has a function.
It does.
Particularly when you are susceptible to monsoon rains and it floods. And have you seen monsoon pictures before? Mm-hmm. Like, it's absolutely incredible how much it rains in India.
Yeah. And we're not far away from Bangladesh, which I think we now are contractually obliged to
mention
every time.
And every single
we
time
know what the monsoon does is in Bangladesh.
It's absolutely horrific what it can do there. But obviously they adapt and they develop around the monsoon season because it's so predictable, the monsoon rains.
But this is an adaptation.
Yeah, this is an adaptation. But removing a means of transport whilst you can't use motorized vehicles in monsoon rains, for me, is a really bad idea.
Mm.
And could really, I think it could damage the economy to a certain extent in the future.
For sure. And the And if you just take it purely economically, even then it's a bad idea because you've got massive unemployment now.
Exactly.
But then thinking socioeconomically, you've now got thousands of people who, as you've said, are simply unable to do another job.
Yeah.
Because they've never been trained to do it.
Yeah. So you've got really fit old people with nothing to do.
What it kind of tangentially reminds me of is something I was talking to my sister about, which was, have you noticed, maybe you have seen in Germany, because you've been here a bit longer than I have, but I've never seen an automatic checkout in a supermarket in Germany.
No, they don't exist.
Because that's someone's job you've taken away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas in the UK, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. And exactly. Why would you take away someone's job like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have a better customer experience and people can get through the shops quicker. But at the same time, not only are you taking someone's job away, you're not getting taxed from that job that you had in the first place as well.
You'll pay for it down the line.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's
kind of a thing.
And it's very German to not want something like that.
Mm.
I think Germans are very, they know that this is, that would affect someone's lives.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. Has undoubted positives, but it also has massive negatives.
Do you want to see a picture while we're here? I can show you a picture very quickly of one guy operating it. I can hand it over.
Yeah.
I'm just handing over, Will, a picture of someone operating a rickshaw, dear listener.
Let me try and describe it. Like, it is exactly what you are imagining. It is simply a man-led chariot, essentially, with a man who you can see the miles he's walked.
Yes.
Written on his face.
I'll definitely tweet that picture.
Yes.
It's a really good picture that kind of encapsulates that he's definitely run a couple of miles with that rickshaw in his years. And the guy sitting in the rickshaw hasn't.
Has absolutely not.
But he's drinking it. What I quite like about this image is he's drinking a nice cup of little coffee, or pretentious coffee that he talked about. So maybe...
But then if he doesn't have a kitchen at home, nothing pretentious about it.
Exactly. No, this is his little... little gift for the day, he's deserved a little bit of coffee, but yeah.
I mean, it just seems so physically brutal that you are literally making money off wearing out someone's body. But I mean, we just kind of hide that in the Western world. It's number time.
It is number time.
And we're still in Rome.
We're still in Rome.
But my number is 80.
Okay.
And my clue is toilets.
80 toilets.
Yes.
How many toilets were in Rome?
It's not how many toilets there were in Rome. No, there was something like 1,600 public toilets in Rome.
Oh, really? How many people lived in Rome?
About 500,000 people lived in ancient Rome.
Okay.
So
question there is, but they would surely have toilets in their own place?
The rich would. Yes.
Oh.
The rich would have plumbing in their own place. And they would have a hypocaust system as well of central heating, which hypo means under, like hypoglycemic or hyperglycemic. Mm-hmm. And caust means heat, like caustic acid burns you, caustic soda, sorry, burns you.
Yes.
So it's heating from under the floor.
Okay.
So my parents, being ludicrously middle class, have a hypocaustic heating system where underfloor heating.
Underfloor heating. Well, we have underfloor heating, yeah.
Well, there you go. Ludicrously middle class as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I don't mind that at all.
No, of course. I mean, your partner owns a tea shop.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
That's a very good point. And we do, in fairness, and then we did play chess once together.
We did. Living the dream.
Living the middle class dream.
Yeah, me with my Potter wife and you with your tea shop owning partner.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So no, it's not 80 toilets. Some people would have toilets in their house, but most people wouldn't. They'd use public toilets. No, someone else.
So not that. Have you an extra clue that you can give me? Or will I have to go for another stab? I'm happy to go for another stab. I just need to think of something though.
How many people have you seen in a toilet at one time? what would strike you as too many people in a single toilet?
Here's something interesting that I experienced.
Here we go.
I used to live in Brighton. I went to university in Brighton.
Okay. Yeah. Are we going to need to slap a 18 certificate,
I think so,
on this
episode? We'll see how it goes. Okay. So I used to live in university in Brighton. And obviously is a huge gay scene in Brighton. Mm-hmm. And one of the clubs we went to, they have a lot of sort of unisex toilets.
Okay.
So anyone can go in there and do anything they want. I think in one club, I remember
anything
they want. I don't make that absolutely clear. I do remember one time being, the first time I was exposed to these sort of unisex toilets.
Quite literally
wandered in because I asked where the men's rooms were and they went, there isn't any men's rooms, which confused me at first. And then I realized that what they meant was it's in everyone's toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Went, okay. went in there, and I think maybe being a teacher teaching in London, I can know when there's about 30 people in a room.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a little bit more than that. 40 okay. people in a bathroom.
That's a lot of people in a bathroom.
I wonder if they were all using the bathroom or not.
Well, define use.
Yeah, it was a space that was being used, I think is probably a better accurate term. But no, maybe 40 people in a toilet in a Brighton okay. gay club.
Was it like Tiberius's swimming pool in that there were genitals being nippled?
Ah, okay. Yes. I think that's a really good, yeah. And less said what the water system was, but probably a very good description.
Okay. Well, that is weak numbers. That is poor effort. 40 people, rubbish.
That's no.
80 people.
80 people.
In a single toilet.
That.
And specifically,
and when we say public toilet, is it just one available?
Well, do you know how Roman toilets work?
No, you're going to need to tell me.
Okay. Have you been to the States, right?
I have been to the States.
You know, in the States, their public toilets have got massive gaps in the floor.
They do.
The top, so that when you close the door, people can just like
look over the top and say hi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're of an average height, it's a bit weird. If you're of my height,
you can have a conversation with people.
Yeah, you can't help but have a conversation with people.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. They don't. It's worse than that in ancient Rome. They don't have any partition between the toilets.
Oh, they have a chat, don't they?
Yeah, they have just long benches, which are all a single long drop that goes into a single pit.
Long drop?
Yeah. So, quite literally, yeah. So you would just sit there, drop your kecks, pop mm-hmm. a squat, and talk to the person sat next to you.
Oh, that's
curry again for dinner, was it?
I've seen an image of this before, actually. Mm. They used to wipe with sponges or
they
something.
They did indeed, yes, exactly. But that's only for the rich.
Okay.
How that would work, I will, don't worry. Don't worry, I've got the goods.
I'm pleased to hear this.
So the way it would work for the rich is there would be a little rivulet, a channel dug into the floor mm-hmm. in front. So you'd have your seat, which is just a hole in a bench.
Okay.
And in front of you, there'd be a little channel of water rushing past you. And there'd be a stick passed around. And you'd dip the stick into the water in order to rinse it off. And then...
Oh, my God.
Squeaky clean. Dip the stick into the water, pass it on to the next person.
Oh, my God. That's heinous.
Yep. Sometimes, if you're lucky, there'd be a pot of vinegar that you could wash it off in.
Okay.
But no, sponge on a stick.
Sponge on a stick.
If you're rich.
If you're rich.
What do you think the poor would use?
Just their hands?
It's slightly better than their hands. It's okay. Not just kind of left hand. It's not like, I mean, many countries of the world, you have to eat with your right hand.
Someone else?
Not someone else. Not a boy to nibble it off. No, handful of gravel.
Oh my God. I was just about to joke and say sandpaper, but it's yep. not a million miles away.
Yeah, just take away the paper. Yep. Yeah. Because you can get all the dingleberries out with that. It's just a good abrasive surface.
Oh God.
And then chuck it in the pit. Yeah, so... The biggest public toilet in Rome, to circle back to the number of times, the biggest public toilet in Rome was in, technically outside of Rome, it's in Ostia, which is the port of Rome.
Okay.
And they could sit 80 people.
Sit 80 people, all shitting at once.
All playing the arse clarinet, or whatever you call it. Dawn orchestra.
What I like this, I got a great image. There's, can you not just have a party, and then you have a dinner in there, and it's all at once, everything well. Happens at once.
In one end, out the other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You haven't got to move?
Nope, just, not at all.
Just sit there and eat until it all goes through, and then you go home.
And then you're done.
Yeah.
So yeah, you drop a squat in public, just on one of these benches, essentially, if you didn't have a loo at home. But you wouldn't pee there.
What?
Because there's no point in like going through all that faff to nip into the public toilet to pee. Instead, there would be pots all over the town that you could just pee in.
Oh, really?
So for men and for women. And the reason why there were pots is because they'd be removed every evening and they'd be sold to washerwomen.
Oh.
And the washerwomen would use the urine to wash clothes.
What?
Because urine's got ammonia in it.
Oh, of course.
And ammonia is quite good at breaking down stains.
Yes.
So you'd pee in a pot.
Pee in a pot.
And it'd be taken to the washerwomen.
There's an economy in that.
There is, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It's a use of waste, which is revolting.
Yeah, two things. Very
full
quickly.
Stop.
It is an absolute, but it's recyclable.
It is recyclable, but in the same way that you can use vomit as a doorstopper if you dry it and freeze it. Like, you can.
Can, but is it a good idea?
Why would you?
Yeah.
Just use ashes. Ashes are much better at doing it anyway.
I have one thing from this. Two things, actually. Firstly, tweed jackets.
Yes.
Isn't there something to do with weeing in that?
Absolutely, yeah. So if you go into the House of Lords, it certainly used to stink of piss.
Because,
because everyone's pissed themselves, but because Tweed, I think it's stiffened up using urine.
Okay, that's one thing I know about wee.
Yeah.
And the other thing I just thought of is, isn't there quite a common danger in the bathroom is if you've bleached the shower and then you piss in the shower.
Aha.
And then you have a reaction, which is ammonia poisoning.
Yeah, ammonia and acid, yeah.
Yeah, and you just fall on the shower floor dead. That's a great murder story.
Now, why, how...
Get the question word.
What kind of filth are you generating that you need to bleach your shower?
That's a good point.
Just scrub it clean.
Well, the thing is, I recently read this about a month ago, and then Chris recently bleached a toilet, and that's all I could think of was, oh my God, I'm going to die.
Just use vinegar.
So, well, I have my number time now.
Number time.
And my number is, 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And my clue is the metaverse.
The metaverse.
Yeah. Do you know what the metaverse is?
I'm thinking goofy goggles and Mark Zuckerberg in a polo neck. In a turtleneck.
It's like you've read my notes. But you're on the right track with what the metaverse is.
Okay, kind of a AI. No, not AI.
Not AI. No, not quite.
Not artificial intelligence, alternate reality. AR.
Yes, AR. That's the one we're looking at here.
And not... UR, West Country.
UR, AR.
Okay.
The 20% of the metaverse.
20% metaverse. Okay. Is it, the thing is with the metaverse, because I was thinking 20% of people say they would use it.
Okay.
Is it even that popular?
So you talk about popularity it's a really good, actually, no is the answer to that. But interestingly, I wonder if your 20% could link to it to a certain extent with a real answer here.
Okay.
It's not the sort of the opinion of will this generation Z, for example, use this in the future as a means of whatever.
Okay.
It's not that. The extra clue is the global economy.
Okay. Are we talking some kind of prediction? Like within...
It's not a prediction. It's a current fact, actually.
So, okay. But the obvious one that comes to mind, therefore, is 20% of the global economy is currently done through the metaverse, which seems like nonsense.
It does seem like nonsense. I may have tricked you slightly. I wanted to get the word metaverse in it to begin with, but 20% of the global economy is digital.
Right. Okay.
Which makes more sense.
That does make more sense.
Yeah. So, this is the era we're in now. We're looking at the digital global economy and leading on to the idea of the metaverse and its future.
That seems high.
I know, right? It does seem high, but to a fifth of all global economy...
is completely intangible. You get no physical product out of it.
Yes. Which is nuts, isn't it?
Weird, ephemeral, threshold-based world we live on.
We are. It's very Orwellian, this has been going into, isn't it?
Okay.
But you wait. Mark Zuckerberg describes the metaverse... Mark Zuckerberg.
Sorry. Yeah. Natural reaction.
Describes the metaverse as an embodied internet that you are inside of rather than just looking at.
I don't want to be in the internet.
Well, this is the thing. So the internet...
Is it just me or does that sound sexual to other people too?
I will let the listener decide that one. So the internet is something which we look at.
Yeah.
Yeah. The metaverse is being within the internet itself.
What does that mean, Mark?
So what the point he's trying to make here is that we, for example, people now create avatars of themselves and that we can then use them to go into a virtual world, into a digital space. And within these digital spaces, there exists, for example, places where you can learn.
Mm-hmm.
You can get books, places where you can communicate with people, but places where you can buy. There are markets now in the virtual world where you can go into shops and use cryptocurrency to improve your avatars.
I don't want to live on this planet
clothes
anymore.
And stuff.
I don't want this.
But it's becoming quite popular. And
of
this
course
is,
it is.
And Facebook, for example, or Meta, as they're called now, are now investing huge amounts of money to create the next stage of the internet, which is in this metaverse, where people are using VR headsets, for example, in this augmented reality. I mean, Pokemon Go, I think, was the first time people were properly exposed to augmented reality. Have you heard of Pokemon Go?
Oh, yeah, of course. I played it for about 2 weeks and then realized, hang on a minute, this is crap. This is a good walk ruined. It's like golf.
It's a little bit like golf. Have you heard of the story of people that have been killed playing Pokemon Go?
Oh, God. I remember stories of people finding dead bodies, which is the worst kind of Pokemon you can get.
That's when augmented reality comes back to life.
I choose you. Yeah, no, but people being killed.
Yeah, walking off of cliffs because they're too engrossed in their phones and falling to their death.
Which reminds me, completely off topic, do you know how the inventor of the Segway died?
It's got to be something to do with the Segway itself.
Segwayed off a cliff.
Yeah, of course he did. Of course he did. And that's a way to go.
That is.
You're dying by the sword.
This absolutely is ironic.
Yeah, brilliant one, that one.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the metaverse here. Now, just to give a little bit of facts here. So since VR has been invented in the way in which we can buy in a electronic store now, so maybe the last 5 or 6 years, you can actually go out and buy a VR headset. Since then, there's been every year a 350% increase of demand.
Okay.
So it's becoming tripling. Popular with not necessarily just Generation Z and the youth, but also of all demographic people are invested in buying this.
I mean, at the risk of getting extraordinarily conceptual, the reason why I dislike this is because it's just mind over body. And there is no difference, in my opinion, between the mind and the body. They are so intricately linked, as we saw last week.
Yes.
Or 2 weeks ago, that this is what you're doing is you're plugging your mind into something and you are completely absolving the body of any care. You just give up on the body.
Yeah.
Is what it seems like to me.
It's like getting in one of those water tanks and living the rest of your life in a dream.
It's the Matrix, exactly.
Yeah, it is the Matrix.
Yeah, it is a sensory deprivation.
Blew all the red pill and then that's it, kind of
completely.
Thing.
Completely. Yeah.
So, well, this is what I wanted to lead on to. So, so there has been discussions about whether the metaverse has a potential to fix many of economic ills around the world.
Oh, God.
But how egalitarian is it really?
Yeah.
Is what we're looking at here.
Because you need to fork out a lot to get connected.
Exactly. So for example, we have two different types of, I've labeled them as democracies here.
Okay.
So we have opportunity democracy.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at the economy, how accessible is this technology to everyone around the world?
Yeah.
If you live in downtown Manhattan, you're going to have a broadband network which can support this new metaverse that's being developed. But if you live in Mumbai, then you don't have access to that so much. So actually, you're having a big, it's not very evenly distributed, the access to these technologies and the businesses which it could ultimately generate as a result. The Jensen Huang, who is a CEO of NVIDIA, sixth biggest company in the world, actually, he predicts that the economy of the metaverse will eventually exceed the real world economy. So that 20%, so not only that 20% of digital economy.
God. Yeah,
right. Well, of course, I do think the CEO of NVIDIA does kind of have to say that.
Bit of vested interest.
Yeah, right. So there's a little bit of bias in that.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of benefits in the metaverse. So one potential benefit is that businesses are untethered to a geographical location. So they can participate in new revenue streams, for example. So they're not footloose industries. They become footloose industries, I call them. So they are not tied to a resource. They can operate anywhere and they can do anything anywhere in an augmented state.
Which is all well and good until I was reading in, I think it was in Private Eye, about how the whole idea of getting people back into offices is because those retail spaces, the offices, people own those and people need to make money off them.
Mm.
And so if you transform the global economy so that people are no longer going to physical spaces to make money, then what do you do with all that real estate in the center of cities?
Well, you could argue to a certain extent, but that was what the big of the high street is changing significantly, isn't it? Because of the online industry.
Yeah.
It's now becoming more of an entertainment industry where you go to have a drink of coffee or a beer or a club or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So the high streets in lots of countries around the world are developing or transforming in that way.
Mm.
What does the metaverse do to that entertainment industry? Because you could then just go to a nightclub online with a virtual reality headset and then they die out.
Oh my God.
So we just live in boxes for the future. And it's like Black Mirror, isn't it? It turns into that state.
Yeah.
However, there's a guy called Mark Graham, who I love this. He is the professor of internet geography at Oxford.
AKA Google Maps.
Yeah, pretty much. And he says he can see the potential of evenly distributed wealth through the metaverse, but reflects on the digital labor history, of recent, which gives more opportunity for exploitation and value extraction.
Well, that's the thing.
Well, you know, because even though we're engaged in this metaverse, we're giving more data to the big data.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, which is, I mean, it's not exactly a worry of mine, but it's something that's certainly in the back of my mind. There was at the risk of advertising other better podcasts, there was a fascinating podcast by Reply All, which I'm sure we've spoken about before. But the data that these companies collect on you, the reason why they were talking about it is because someone got in touch with them and said, I just visited my mum. We were talking about a coffee machine. I go back home and I'm getting adverts about the coffee machine. Is my phone listening to me?
We had an experience once in your car, didn't we? When I was going to go to a bike shop. And we had been discussing about during the school building about I need a lift to the bike shop to get my bike repaired. And then you opened Google Maps on your phone.
And it immediately told me.
And it immediately popped up on your phone where the location of this bike shop was.
Yeah. And not in any kind of directions way, but just when you open Google Maps and it's got kind of the five biggest landmarks in your area. Yes. One of them is this bike shop.
Yeah. Which is crazy, isn't it?
It is. To save you an hour of listening to this podcast, the conclusion was, Google knows what you're doing. Google knows what you're looking for. Yeah. And it knows what people who you're with are looking for.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. And so that, but everything you do is online.
Which is crazy. But there is a good side to this. And the other sort of democracy I want to talk about here is something called the flow of information democracy.
Ah.
Okay. Absolutely. Have you heard of something called the uncensored library?
Oh, yeah. Is this in Minecraft?
It is in Minecraft.
Yeah, it's a Minecraft server.
What do you know about it? Do you know anything about it?
I know, it was important in, I think, Libya and Egypt for a while because of censorship. You can write anything in a Minecraft book, and because it's not hosted in those countries, anyone could go and visit.
Pretty much. So you got the books of the Saudi Arabian guy called Jamal Khashoggi, the one that was murdered in Istanbul.
Yeah,
he's
the Saudi Arabian government. Can we say that? And we're not visiting Saudi Arabia.
We're not visiting Saudi Arabia. But it was it was a prince. I do have his name somewhere, but it was Mohammed bin Salman.
Yeah.
And so he was murdered in Istanbul, but a lot of his work can be found in that Minecraft space. And there's also Nguyen Van Dai, the Vietnamese blogger who's been in prison 15 years. A lot of his work can be found in the uncensored library within Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can access that as well. It's completely accessible, and you can go in with your VR headset if you want to. They do have a hashtag, which is hashtag truth finds a way, which is so the right of information is an important part of them. So the reason that this is important in terms of metaverse, because you could that's a part of the metaverse, because you experience it in an immersive world.
Yeah,
to go into this library to read truth, as they call it, articles from people that have been either banned within their home countries to publish.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the other thing as well, is with this metaverse, it's important to remember that we have a flow of information, not necessarily just economy, but also information as well.
Which is very important.
Yeah.
And I mean, thinking historically, the printing press, 60 years later, you have the Reformation, and then you have huge upheaval throughout Europe for hundreds of years. Similarly with mass production of media, kind of radio and internet. Radio and television in the 20th century. So the internet, we are living through that.
But this is where it kind of leads eventually onto, and this is where I want to probably end with this actually, but this conceptual idea of what geography is. Okay, so geography concepts are usually based around human and physical features and how they interact with one another.
Yeah.
But are we now in geography coming to the next stage where we have three spheres? We have human, physical, but now we have the digital area. And that in itself might be strong enough to be its own entity of how they interact with one another.
Uh-huh.
So that's the conceptual idea that I have here, is geography now moving towards sort of a digital sphere as well as human and physical interactions of one another.
So therefore, what is geography? Is it the interaction of human beings with their context?
Yeah, with their context and their surroundings, of course. Mm. So now...
Sounds a bit like history to me.
Yeah, oh, here we go. You're going to bring it back to history.
There's a good reason we're sat 4 metres apart right now.
Do they have iPads in Roman times?
No. No, but did human beings have a context in Roman times?
Maybe they did, yes, okay. But that's the concept. What is geography turning into in the future? Is it now going to have a digital interactive space, which we have to consider when we take geography as a subject?
And there is an extent to which, I mean, our lives are lived so online. I mean, this very podcast is experienced by the two of us now sat here in your front room.
Exactly.
And by everyone else completely digitally.
Yes.
Like they.
No one else is here with us listening to it live.
Just I hope not.
I hope not. Well, Kristen was here earlier and listening to us. But yeah, no, they might. Google's listening to us right now.
Actually, on that note, I did think when we put that at the, we will get back to the serious stuff in a second, don't worry. But when we put that at the front of the last episode, I do wonder how many people's Google assistants were then set off.
It already set my own one off did when it? I played it back. Yes, it turned on all the lights again. It got certainly them. Did. But yeah, so that's a conceptual idea. What is geography moving towards as a subject? Do we now have to include the digital space? Because it is, even though it's digitalized, it is a space.
It is, and you can talk of a topography of the space. You can talk of the layer of the land, of different ways of accessing it. But it is different because it's a digital space in the same way that, I mean, there are barriers. It is a forbidden kingdom that you can only access through those barriers.
It is.
So I, for example, as long as I can avoid it, will never access the meta version of Metaverse because I simply have no interest in doing so.
Yeah, I see.
In the same way that one could avoid traveling to Tibet 50 years ago. So well, that's nice.
That's a really good way to end this.
And that's why you won't find me there. I'll be on the beach, beach.
We'll be on the beach playing football or throwing a beach ball around.
I'll be reading your book. Let's be serious. Let's be honest.
But yeah, maybe that's how humans should live their lives, talking to each other in the face.
And with that, I can see some valid reasons for it. For example, I did my job interview about a week before lockdown happened, but for job interviews that you could do online, doing it over Zoom's weird. But we're doing it with a little kind of wobbly meeple who...
little avatar.
Yeah.
You have to dress them up. You have to go to the shop.
Exactly.
To spend cryptocurrency to get your suit.
That's the thing that you will never own in any meaningful way.
No. But you own it in your virtual world. There are two yous.
There are. But then, I mean, my shirt's falling apart here. Have I owned this in a meaningful way? Or has that just been owned in time and space?
See.
Four.
It's a big shirt.
Thank you. I am putting on weight at the moment. I'm not intentionally, just because it's the holiday.
So, well, I'm totally factored out for this episode, and I don't know how you feel.
You are factored out.
I'm totally factored out, yeah. It might be that reminiscent time while I was in that Brighton bar. I don't know.
Unfacting believable.
But if you want to get in contact with us, you can do through Twitter at Gaps Podcast, and you can also find our YouTube, which is Gaps in Knowledge Podcast.
Or you can email us, which is gapsinknowledge@outlook.com, or on Facebook. Soon to be in the metaverse.
It is, yes.
Look up Gaps in Knowledge or talk to you. How would you do that on the metaverse?
I don't know. You have to go into one of those meeting rooms, I suppose. I don't know how that works.
Ask Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
There's a gap in our knowledge.
Absolutely.
Which I don't intend to fill, if I'm honest.
No, not really. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. And tell a friend if you enjoyed this episode, and we will see you in the next one.
Yeah, see you in May, I think.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Bye.
Ta-ra.